The music's on, the disco ball has dropped, and it's time to get this party started. You're listening to episode 31 of Disco Trek, a Star Trek Discovery After Party podcast here on the Tricorder Transmissions Network. I'm your host, Heather Barker, and with me at the turntable, as always, back from the Delta Quadrant, again, my co-host, Jeff Hewlett. Hi, Jeff.
Well, the Delta Quadrant and the Sick Quadrant seem to be the same thing. So, yes, I am back from my deathbed that I spent most of January in. And it's nice to be back. It's nice to be able to talk Discovery with all of you guys. And I really miss not being on those first two episodes. So I've been looking forward to this one.
Yay. We missed you, as I will proudly say in every episode moving forward. With us to talk about the episode. Oh, wait, let me start over. 3, 2, 1. For those who aren't familiar with the podcast, we're a community-based Star Trek discotheque of sorts, focusing on each episode of Discovery as they air. Tonight, we're discussing episode 4, An Obel for Charon. With us to talk about the episode are two members of the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas convention group on Facebook, which is the exclusive gateway to gain admission onto the show. Our first guest, other half, was on last week.
Yes.
So, Eric Muirhead, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, hey, Heather. Hey, Jeff. Thanks Hello. For having me on the show. My name is Eric Muirhead. I am one of the admins of USS Pershing Officers Club on Facebook, as well as USSPershing.com. We are reworking our website to become an online Star Trek fan resource.
Nice.
We are working to incorporate all the aspects of fandom, fan fiction, costuming, cosplay, props, all that stuff, trying to put it together on one website to build a community and cool. And hopefully help new fans answers to the questions that they are either too afraid or don't know they should be asking. So
I think you're talking to the right audience right now.
And thanks again for making me and Annie a part of the unofficial group. It was our gateway into the fan family, and we're trying to pay it forward a little bit.
Well, I think that's a wonderful segue to our next guest, because Sarah Rules may know a little bit about the unofficial STLV group. She played a crucial part in its founding. So welcome, Sarah. Tell us a little bit about
Hello. You. Hello. Yes. Thank you, first of all, for letting me be on this. I think it's so cool that you guys have opened this up for anyone to participate. It's just so great to see so many people getting involved on the group and talking about it. That's true. The unofficial group is something that I started probably after I went to the convention in Las Vegas in about 2005. That was the first year I went. And me and my best friend Haley had gone a few years in a row, and we just met so many people over those crazy days. And it's so hard to keep in touch with people that I just thought I might as well start a group on Facebook. And it's a way to let people join. Not everyone wants to add people they don't know as friends because of privacy or whatever. So it just kind of started off as me messaging those few I did connect with and, you know, pass it on. And it got absolutely bananas, and things got bananas for me. And so luckily, you know, I'd made some great connections, including you, Heather. And I just knew that for someone to really take it on and make it something even more, I needed help with that, or I needed someone to do it. And you took it on, and you've made it just bigger than I ever could have imagined with the help of all the admins. And I just think it's so awesome. So thank you for taking care of it and making it what it is today.
Oh, well, thank you for trusting me with your baby. We have something like 4,600 members at this point, and actually have a pinned announcement that talks about the whole, you know, friends, and that you don't have to add people you don't know. And that's why groups are really great, because you can still interact with people without having to open up that boundary that some people are okay with and some people are not. So
exactly. No pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. You know what? Yeah.
I have to chime in real quick and say thank you to Sarah, because, yeah, you know, Heather and I created, I think, what have been the most successful episodes of Shore Leave based on that community. Our STLV 101 episodes have been the most downloaded ones. People who are going to go to the convention and they want to know what they're getting themselves into. And, you know, we've got a lot of great reactions to that. I think it's just been a wonderful, wonderful group. And, you know, it's such a great community to be a part of.
Yeah. We you know, we've all met at STLV. And so,
we did.
You know, Shore Leave was created really as a product of, mm-hmm. of the unofficial STLV group and just having gone. And then when we were tossing around ideas about a Discovery podcast, because we weren't planning on doing one.
We weren't.
but was the listeners requested.
Wanted it.
Yeah, a lot of people asked us at STLV the 1 year. And so we're like, well, what can we do to make this different and for the community? And so that's largely why we made the podcast, was for people in the group to have a way to talk about Discovery that wasn't just, you know, in the group, but being able to, you know, pop on a podcast like you, Sarah, for the very first time. And it's terrible. I say we've popped a lot of podcast cherries, which is probably an appropriate conversation.
I might have to put the explicit tag on this one.
Look, we absolutely love introducing people to this Podern family, as the hashtag is on Twitter. I find that once you appear on a podcast once, it's hard to stop. And that's okay. I like having such a variety of podcasts to listen to. There is literally a podcast for everyone out there now. Mm-hmm. But enough podcast and STLV chatter. We're going to hop into our discussion of the episode in just a moment. But first, we have some housekeeping to do. As we've mentioned, Disco Trek is community focused and evolved from our desire to give fans and our convention community a way to talk about Discovery. So for you to join the show, make sure you're a member of the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas convention group on Facebook. Once you do that, you'll see a new post about midweek with the Disco Trek image and information on the weekend's recording time. Just comment on that post to be entered, and we use a random generator to pick two winners, typically on Saturday. Once you've been on the podcast, you can't come back for this season. We've opened it up to people who were on last season, like Eric, can come back and be part of this season. So in the meantime, we do have a post in the unofficial STLV group that starts off as a non-spoilery post where people can comment. And then we have decided to just use the same post and open that up to spoilery discussion after a few days. So if you want to talk about the episode there, that would be awesome. And you can engage us on Twitter. We'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. But we also have a Patreon. And I think we have a really awesome new patron this week. So Jeff, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So yes, we do have a Patreon page. You can find it by going to the tricordertransmissions.com and clicking on the big orange Patreon link, or patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. You can join our Patreon family. And we do have a new patron this week. As Heather said, she's been a guest, I think, on two Tricorder episodes so far. This is Heather Kirby. So thank you so much for joining our Patreon family. We so much appreciate your contributions to our network, as we do all of our other patrons who've been with us so far. So thanks you to every single one of you. We love you. And I know we've said this before. but we're actually finally getting it ready to go. We do have some new Patreon rewards coming to you all very, very soon. We had a meeting earlier, and you know, we've been talking about this online together, and we're going to have some really cool stuff coming your way very soon.
Yeah, essentially, spoiler alert, things like being able to come on the podcasts. We're going to make certain tiers. So one thing we will never do is restrict our Patreon roundtables. They will always be anyone who donates $1 or above will get access to those, because that's one of the most fun parts of what we do. But we will have a few different tiers with varying perks, and some of those will be influential, where you get to decide what we talk about on our podcast. There may be guest appearances. There may be special STLV swag.
Definitely
you will just have to keep an eye on the Patreon page. We'll probably have that all done in the next month or so, which sounds really long, but we're all super busy, so please forgive us. Also, Heather Kirby is my dear, sweet, wonderful friend. I adore her. She is my Zahia, my twin, and I am just so, so grateful that she is now in our Patreon family. I'm going to cry. I'm really not. She helped us coin Live, Love, and Prosper for the end of Queer Trek, our Queer Trek tagline.
Very sweet.
So nice. Yeah, Heart eyes, super happy. All right, so number one, spoiler alert. If you did not watch this episode, what are you doing? Go back, watch the episode, and then come back here, unless you don't care, because we're going to spoil it all for you. And trust me, there's lots of spoilers to be had in this episode. So how this works, our show is a general discussion about the episode segmented into three parts. The first is Drop the Record, which will be our opening remarks and reaction to the episode. Play a New Track comes next. That's where we explore what we've learned that's new about the Star Trek universe. And Spin It Again is our look back at standout moments, themes, characters, scenes, whatever you feel like giving a second glance and a super special shout out. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about this episode. We had another episode full of stuff going on. There is so much to talk about, and I don't know how we're going to do it in this time, but somehow we always managed to pull it off. So I'm curious to hear, Sarah, what did you think about this episode?
I thought this was a great episode. Before I get specific, I just want to say that I am so excited that I love Discovery as much as I do. I feel like I've been waiting almost over 25 years to have this reaction to Star Trek again, like I had when I was 10 and 11 watching TNG. I've always enjoyed the other TV shows and the movies, but this one, I just feel like I'm into it. I'm obsessed with it. I love it. I want to see it over and over again, which is just so exciting. I thought this episode was full of so many things. I watched it a couple of times. I wrote notes. I don't even know what to say. Like, it was just, there's so much room for discussion on so many different aspects of it.
We will pop into all that here in a minute. So Eric, what about you?
I just want to second that. I am really excited about Discovery season two. As good as season one was, season two has just been blowing me away. My first reaction about this episode is, I know last week we referred to the episode as a ping pong match. This was like Wimbledon, like full speed, whiplash, just a million things going on at once. And the one thing I would say to the Discovery writers right now is, I know you want to say everything, but it's okay to slow down a little bit,
right?
And focus a little bit more on the characters, because we had some great moments with Saru and Burnham. Mm-hmm. We had some great time getting to know Jet Reno a little more. Mm-hmm. The ongoing saga of Tilly Stamets and May Ahern is going on, but we're just going back and forth so fast. It's you just ask yourself, what's going on? And every time you watch the episode, I watched it three times, and you catch something new every single time still.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, what about you?
Well, I have to start with a question. Eric, did you hack into my notes? You said pretty much everything I was about to say. You know, this is the second episode in a row where it felt like there was so much packed into that episode that I had to watch it multiple times just to be able to grasp everything that they were hitting us with. I like this episode much better than the previous one. I'll say that right off the bat. Like you said, the Saru and Burnham connection in this episode, I think this is one of the best episodes for character development for Saru. We're going to get more. I know Heather doesn't want to hear it, but we're going to get more into this later. I know you said earlier we shouldn't say that, but we are going to get more into this later. I think it's inevitable. But I don't want to muddy up the episode, this episode, with this. So I'm going to put this in my general thoughts on this episode. There were some moments in this episode that sent me back to my childhood. And I'm going to make a big confession here. I don't think I've ever said this on any Star Trek, Tricorder Transmission episode before. So please don't crucify me for this. But when I was a child, the only monster that I was ever afraid of, terrified of, was the Blob. And so hear me out. So, you know, Stamets referred to the creature as a Blob. And I don't know if this was intentional or not. I wish I had an in with the writers to ask this question, because it really feels like it is. If you are a fan of the Blob, or you've watched the original Blob or the 88 remake, the first victim of the Blob attached to their arm. and then further consume them. So it attaching to Tilly's arm and then further consuming her totally brought the blob reference back into my mind. I was kind of like, this has to be intentional, but maybe it's not. I don't know. But I was just blown away by that. It's so coincidental that it feels like it can't be coincidence to me. So I'll leave it at that. But thank you for indulging me.
Well, we'll send the writer's room a tweet and ask if it was intentional or not. I have no, I've never seen any of the blob stuff.
Have any of you guys watched it?
I've seen the original a long time ago.
Yeah, the original one and the 88 remake, they both have the same first victim. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way. It seems so coincidental.
You know,
a little nod.
I think you're right, Jeff, because, I mean, beyond just the blob, I think the Discovery writers are really in tune to, like, 20th century and early 21st century pop culture. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of those nods in Discovery, and you only kind of get it if you know.
I have to agree with that, because there have been so many little nods and references in season one and so far in season two. And it's a non-Star Trek nod, I admit. But it seems like something that somebody in the writer's room kind of finessed in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, even in this episode alone, we had the David Bowie song.
Yes. And William Shatner, by the way, because Shatner covered Rocket Man.
I don't care about Shatner.
Hey,
get Shatner out of it. and then we had Reno, you know, her dream was she was Prince or playing drums for Prince or something. Mm-hmm. So we get those scattered across episodes and thrown in fun little ways. So I wouldn't be surprised. I think we will have to send out a tweet. I will do it tomorrow and see what we can find out about the blob. After I watched this episode, and I watched this episode at the end of a really long day, like I was exhausted. And I was just like, what was that? Like, I have to go back and watch it again. So I've watched it, I think, three times now. And I was, unlike last week, obviously people know I struggled a bit. I think I came to a really good place, thankfully, and thanks to our guests. But this time, like, I was really excited to watch the episode again, because I just knew that there was so much that I really wanted to pay a lot of attention to. And I've referenced this before, but it's just, I think it's great advice. I'm sorry to say it's my own great advice. That sounds arrogant. That's not what I mean. If you struggle with an episode the first time and you're not totally sure about it, go back and rewatch it. And if you need to give yourself a day or whatever, just kind of go back and rewatch, because that's where I really start to fall in love with the episodes more. And that's only like me, my own experience. I tend to be critical, more critical than I need to be sometimes. And that often takes me out of my own experience. So when I remind myself not to do that and to really think about what's happening on screen, especially with an episode like this that goes so quickly, you're kind of moving from one place to another. And I think I can say that emotionally, we were really moved around with what was happening. Because you're sitting in scenes with Saru and Burnham that are extremely emotionally charged. And then you're moving on to the chaos of what's going on with Reno, Stamets, and Tilly, which then also becomes emotionally charged at some point. And then the main plot with the sphere. So you kind of just got to take that deep breath, watch it once, come back, watch it again. And really dive in, because I will say, and I'm curious to talk about Saru and Burnham, because there's mixed feedback across the board. And overall, it seems like the character building between the two of them and the relationship building was so phenomenally well written and acted. Like, there's some really beautiful stuff and some stuff that gets brought up, like the refugee point. That Saru mentions. Mm-hmm. And these were really like long, like not drawn out, but longer scenes where you're just like really invested in those moments. And so I've seen some people struggle with, they didn't feel there was enough setup to really understand or connect with the amount of emotion that was happening between Burnham and Saru. And then, you know, you have the other camp who's just on the floor bawling because of mm-hmm. how amazingly wonderful it was. So, Eric, I'm curious what you thought about those scenes. Did they work really well for you? Did they not work?
So I have a lot of notes about the Saru arc in this episode. And so first off, the acting of Doug Jones in this episode is just mind-blowingly good. I cannot imagine being able to show that emotion through that much makeup. Doug Jones is just phenomenal. But I find myself a little more in the camp of this was such an important character building episode for Saru that I wanted that to be the episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think that the episode should have been the Sphere Saru story, and that maybe we could have kept the Tilly May Ahern thing on the back burner until next episode. Yeah. Just to give Saru and Burnham more time to develop that, because we learned so many amazing things about Saru in such a short time. And I feel like poor Doug Jones had to like say those incredible lines as fast as he could to get them out in the time that his character had on screen.
Sarah, what do you think? Did it work for you? Did it not?
It did. I don't read too many of the message boards about the episodes, especially when people get negative, because I'm just very optimistic about my Star Trek in general. But I get that everyone has strong opinions. And with this one, I thought it was a really realistic way that the two of them dealt with the situation as it was, because they've been through so many ups and downs together. And sometimes you need that horrible thing to come and hit you right in the face before you start saying the things that you really mean about, you know, your family to me or whatever. So I thought that was just so well done. And we are so lucky to have Doug Jones, because I just can't imagine anybody else doing that. You know, he's just so talented to do all the movies he's done with all this makeup that he's nailed it.
Yeah. And the fact that most of the time when we see Doug Jones, even when there's a speaking role with the character, it's not actually him speaking. So I feel like mm-hmm. this is, I don't know if it is the first time, because I don't know Doug's entire catalog, but for me, it's the first time seeing him as a character, seeing him as an actor, you know, it fully being him, like fully his character. And I think that all of the actors in Discovery are a gift.
Mm-hmm. Seconded.
But yeah, yep. I've seen a lot of Doug Jones deserves an Emmy for this. I don't disagree. I think I would love to see Doug rewarded for mm-hmm. everything he's done mm-hmm. here. Jeff, what are your thoughts on Saru and Burnham?
Well, I agree with Eric and Sarah's points. This, to me, the highlight of this episode was the scenes between Saru and Burnham and the character building. And not only did we learn so much about Saru's struggle and his backstory, you know, we see that through that experience, Burnham grows and changes her mind about her feelings towards interacting with Spock. We go from the beginning of the episode where Burnham is like, nope, don't want to talk to Spock, don't want to see him. It's going mm-hmm. to jeopardize things. It's going to make things worse. And at the end of the episode, after going through what she went through with Saru and him almost dying, she changes her mind and realizes how important that familial relationship is, because she realizes that Saru and some of the other Discovery people who she's been through all this are her actual family now. And she says as much. So I think that, you know, this was, from my perspective, this episode was very important in a transformative way for Saru and for Burnham in quite the same way. I think they both grow. And what I'm really excited about, and I'm sure this will get mentioned again in the episode, but what I'm really excited about is this new Saru, you know, who's now mm-hmm. free of his fear. Yes. And he can be himself now. I'm really wondering now for the future, what's Saru going to be like? He's emboldened, and mm-hmm. I want to see him do everything that he can to free his people and get General Order Number 1 lifted. from his home world. I think that's going to be his mantra, maybe not this season, but possibly for a thread in the third season, where, you know, he's going to really make a campaign to get that order lifted and get the Kelpien people out of the hell that they're living in. I think that's an incredibly wonderful thread. And I think that all of us would love to see that happen, because now we know just how terrible life is for the Kelpians and how much fear they live in. And Starfleet can really help change that. So, you know, Saru's sacrifice in leaving his sister on their homeworld without even saying goodbye and joining Starfleet with the intent of helping people, I think that's a really great seed for what could be his future on Discovery.
I agree. Mm-hmm. And one thing I love about the character of Saru is when we first saw him in the pilot episode, I was like, I'm not sure I'm going to like this guy. I really wasn't sure. But every single time we really see him, I am always struck by his professionalism and his discipline. Like, I loved the line, "Am I the only one who bothered to learn another language?" Like, he is in Starfleet for the right reasons, and he always makes sure to take care of the people around him. And he just gets better every time we get a chance to know him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I really liked that he said, talking about the languages, that he's learned multiple languages yet never shared his own. And it was for fear of revealing his own alienness. And yes, that I just immediately thought big of moments. Spock when he said that. Yep. Big and we have an ongoing conversation about the other and how the other is treated in Discovery. But that just really resonated for me. And I think we all kind of deal with that in our own ways, with our revealing our own weirdness. I think this episode is kind of what we had hoped for with Siwis Pacabellum, or whatever it was called. Now I'm the Pavan episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Siwis Param Pacabellum, I think. Because that was the Saru, you know, the Saru centric episode. And yet what we got was not quite what we were expecting, whereas this was definitely more of a deep character dive, dealing with an internal conflict and really I'm curious about his experience coming in as a refugee. Mm-hmm. And I think that would make a really good Polytrex episode, talking about refugee status in Star Trek, if they've not already done one. I don't know that they have, but I thought that was a really interesting note. Of course, a powerful message that was thrown in. And yeah, I mean, I will admit, I think that because of how fast-paced this episode was, and because we had those just emotionally charged, focused moments, I had trouble, just because then we got pulled out of them.
Yeah.
Yep. So much packed in. Yep.
Yeah, it was like there was just a weird thing with the pacing. Like, this episode is as fast as it moved, it seemed so much longer to me than some of the other episodes.
I didn't know I could go that long without blinking.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I don't know. It felt like a very long, which isn't a bad thing. It's not a complaint. It felt longer. So I had some trouble then, and I will be the first to admit, I did not think that Saru was going to die. Like, I sat there like, no, this isn't happening. And as it went on, and as we start to see Burnham's reaction and all of this emotion, and there's this huge, I don't even know what to call it. Experience is what it was. Yeah. I did start to think, wow, are they really going to do this? Like, we haven't heard anything about Doug Jones leaving. And I think that somewhere in there, I just got a little frustrated, because the scene started to feel a little longer for me. And I was like, what is really going to happen here? I don't know. Did you guys think he was actually like convinced that he was dying, or
no
did
way.
You know?
No,
I was, there was not. a little, there's a part of me that was worried about it just because I've always been such a big fan of Sonequa and her work on The Walking Dead. And on that show, you never get attached because you lose people all the time. So watching this, I was like, oh God, oh, this, they're going to. And when the bridge crew stood up as he left, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. So I was, a part of me was worried, but I was really, really glad he's still kicking.
Yeah.
There was not one moment where I thought he was actually going to die. When he first revealed that he was going to die, I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. He's not going to die. Yeah. There's going to be some miracle that's going to get pulled off at the end of this where he's going to be totally fine and back to normal. That, and you know, I didn't know if it was going to be the destruction of the sphere that immediately made him better or whatever else. I wasn't bought into the fact that he was actually going to die. I don't know how everybody else feels, but Eric, what did you think?
No, the first time I actually watched the episode, Annie and I were on the couch and we just looked at each other like, he's not dying. And I think at first I was a little annoyed by that, by like, oh, come on, they're not going to kill him. But then the more I thought about it, the more I realized that the cool thing about Saru's character is as the show is going on, he starts out like completely convinced that whatever Kelpians have been told is the way things are. Like there's only one purpose to my species, to sense the coming of death. There's only one purpose of my species. This is what we do. But as Saru grows, he's starting to realize that he doesn't have to believe his own limitations. Mm-hmm. And he's realizing I can be myself. I can be an individual. I don't have to just believe whatever the Ba'ul has told me about my species.
Yeah. To follow up, Jeff, I mean, I am so eager to see what they do moving forward, because it's a powerful conundrum. Mm-hmm. Like what do you do and can you do it? And I think that, you know, right along with the sphere plot, like Saru said, there's no reason not to believe this isn't malevolent, basically. And then by the end of the episode, they've kind of figured out, especially with this empathy, which I'll use that to segue into the next section here in a minute. But, you know, by the end of it, he understood, like, no, this is it. It needs our help. And so his change in how he saw the sphere kind of coincides with his change here. And I'm really curious because he, like watching the short trek, you know, he knew he needed to go somewhere else. He knew that what was there on Kaminar, it wasn't for him. And he kind of walked away from everything. Yes, it was a big sacrifice, but we didn't get to really see a struggle with that sacrifice, with having to leave your family and your sister and not getting to say goodbye. And now we're seeing that after this time in Starfleet, I think he regrets how he left. And so I'm really eager to see what happens. But yeah, speaking of things we've learned new about Star Trek, we'll segue into play a new track, because I thought it was very interesting that we learned that Kelpians are biologically wired to be empathic. And I may have missed if that happened in any of the novels. I don't recall. I don't remember it happening, like coming up in the series before, but just another reason for me to love Saru so much. Because empathy is something that I deal with. I care too much about people. And that's not a bad thing. And I think that's part of what makes Saru so special, and especially special to me. So what else did we learn that's new about the Star Trek universe? Eric, why don't you start us off for this one?
I got so many. Try to pick one that really stands out. The one that really I loved. So I thought another real standout character from this episode was Jet Reno. Mm-hmm. I really I loved her. I absolutely loved her. And I think going back to the season theme of a different types of faith, I would say like this is an examination of like pragmatism versus idealism in this episode. And I love the discussion between her and Stamets about antimatter, dilithium, and new technologies like the spore drive. I love the idea of antimatter and dilithium being considered old school and the reliable old way of transportation.
Yeah, it was definitely, there's a conversation to be had there because we had renewable energy versus things like mining. But then at the end of it, we find out that, you know, using the spore drive and jumping is basically what's destroying who we know is May Ahern, who's one of the Jessup, destroying their ecosystem, which I'm sure that's a whole other conversation point. But, you know, we're not just saying renewable energy is the way. It's like, even here, there's still a consequence. So I think, again, that's a really great idea for a podcast. Sarah, what about you? How do you feel about Reno?
Oh, I'm excited. I really, really like Reno. Yeah. What attracts me to that character is just, I know that person. I work with people like that. I'm really good at my job. I know what I'm doing. Leave me alone. Here's a little sarcasm to top it off, but there's also heart there. And I think we saw some glimpses in this episode of potential.
Yeah. And I noticed, like, I think in the very beginning where she comes into engineering, sure, she's not like flowers and ponies or something. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something maybe with Tig's delivery or just how the character is, where when we're very first meeting her, she's a little monotonous or something. Like, I don't know if that's the right word, but she's kind of like a one tone. Mm-hmm. You're not really seeing the emotion being expressed. And I felt like once they started working together, like she changed and she started to emote more, and there was inflection in her voice. Yeah. And so, like, I think it's a great observation, the pragmatism versus idealism. But then I also wondered from a character perspective, if, you know, we don't know her. So what if she also is like some of us who even like has a little wall or something, like has a little screen up. And then once she feels comfortable, she starts to lower that a little bit. I don't know. I think she's pretty damn cool.
Totally.
Jeff, how do you feel about Reno and then the scenes with Tilly and Stamets?
I'm going to preface this by saying I've watched a lot of Tig's stand-up comedy, and I do love her, and I think she's extremely funny. I feel like her, so far, and this may change, I feel like it's a bit over-snark. There's a little bit too much snark in that character at this point. I know there's potential there. I don't know how many episodes she's actually going to be in. I know she said in an interview that her participation in Discovery was a little bit limited, but so there's still room for her character to grow, and obviously the talents that she has can benefit Discovery, so I'm optimistic about that. But so far it feels like there's just like a little too much snark for me. I don't know if you guys probably don't feel the same way, judging by your input on this, but a lot of those scenes were like, I could use a little bit less of that and a little more of, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but I could use a little less of the snark factor for her.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, go ahead, guys.
I was going to say, I really agree with Sarah, because I too like work with people who are exactly like that. And I really like Heather's observation about, you know, she keeps the shields up until she really knows you, because like she walks in there with her tool bag and her mission and, you know, her attitude
and a drill.
I'm not here to be your buddy. Like, I'm not here to be your friend. I'm here to do a job. And if you can either help me or not. And I really appreciate that you kind of have to earn her respect before she kind of lets you into your world. I understand the snark thing, because it's kind of it's really different than what we're used to in the kind of Star Trek Starfleet dynamic.
It's almost like season one Stamets snark.
Yeah, but I think she's a great foible to Stamets, because Stamets has idealism snark. Like, I think I'm doing something really, really great, and you need to understand that. While Reno has the kind of like the blue collar, like plumber snark, like clog the drain, like flyboy.
Yeah. Well, I even thought though, just within this episode, that you even see a little bit of the character go from snark to sass. I kind of watched the scenes really closely the second time around, and in the beginning, she does throw the snarkiness. It's got that little bit of an undertone that's just a little bit much, a little mean. But you know, watching her reactions to the way Stamets pulls Tilly towards him when he rescues her. And she, I feel like she almost notices like this is, these people really care, that it almost goes from snarky to sassy. And it's just a little bit, still the personality, but with less bite. But maybe that's just me seeing it.
I think that all we need is a little, psilocybin, is that how you say it?
Psilocybin,
thank you. To feel like, guys, I don't know what that was. Like, that was wild.
Magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
I know that professionally. Professionally, I know that.
Well, we don't look down on how anyone knows how mushrooms work. It was... it was wild. But I thought it was funny that they're both basically like, you're awesome. No, you're awesome. By the end of the episode,
Reno definitely partied before she joined Starfleet. Like she definitely had to drink a lot of water before her first day on the job.
I don't doubt it. I did a poll on Twitter, and by a landslide, people either really love her or like her and want to see more. Your opinion is valid, and many other people have it, mm-hmm. So you are not alone.
Well, I'm not saying that I don't want to see more of her.
Right. That's,
don't take it that way. No, I do I'm want not. To see more of her. I think she has things that she can contribute to Discovery and the rest of the season. I just feel like the way that the character is written up till now feels overly snarky. And I get the whole, you know, hiding behind your shield until you know people. And, you know, I'm kind of that way sometimes as well with strangers. So I totally get that. It just feels like there's so much drama in this season so far. I'm like, okay, now we're adding more drama with this one-off character that they've added in. I'm like, okay, I'm over-dramaed at this point. I need to dial it back a little.
I think we need to find people like Tilly and people like Jet Reno to bring on the podcast and interview so that everybody can get to meet people. I seem to find like a dis, like I don't know that I know anyone just like Jet Reno. I know a lot of people like Tilly, so I'm super sensitive to some of the criticism that I've seen regarding Tilly's character. And I think it's probably similar here with Reno, is that she's probably pretty spot on, as you guys have both said. And at least for me, like I don't know anyone like her. I think she's groovy. I can't wait to see more from her. But let's talk about something else. Let's see. I will go back and forth here for a minute. Sarah, did you have something that you wanted to point out that you learned?
Something kind of fun. We learned that Linus has 6 nasal canals, and when he was sick, it sucked. I really like that character. I'm just really excited for more Linus. I don't know why.
I think he's redeemed from not saying, I mean, you know, even though he sneezed on what's his face, who, you know, rest in peace. I forgot your name already, dude. I just was like, you know, say, you know, excuse me if you sneeze on somebody, but I thought he was hilarious in this episode. I don't know. Eric, did you like Linus?
I do. I love the fact that we have more like non-traditional aliens taking part in things. Like that was a big criticism I had with TNG and Deep Space Nine and the previous Star Treks. And I know it was makeup budget, but having more interesting species actually taking part in benign meetings. Like I loved it when he said it sucked. Like, he's just another guy on the crew doing his job. And I love that.
That's so true. And that scene was pretty cool. Like having a conference room scene, that, you know, so very Star Trek. So I like that a lot. Jeff, how do you feel about Linus?
So I enjoy Linus. I thought it was, there were some funny moments there, but anybody who's listened to the Tricorder transmissions can see this coming a mile away. One of my rants about Star Trek as a whole is the amount of humanoid aliens in Star Trek. And I realize it's probably a budget thing. It would probably cost a lot of money to do a CGI alien that's not humanoid, who's part of the crew. I liked the Linus character. I thought it was interesting. There was some funny stuff, but I wish that there was a way to have a really non-humanoid character as a part of the Discovery crew. I don't care. 4 legs, 5 arms. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do something that's not 2 legs, 2 arms and a head. Not to take away from Linus, don't take my rant as a slight against that character, because it was really good. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of that in the future. I just wish that we had the, I'm sure it's a budgetary thing, but I wish we had a true non-humanoid character, like a Tholian or something, on the crew of Discovery. That would really shake things up a bit.
All righty. What do you have on your list, Jeff, that you learned in this episode?
Ooh, so I learned that they still chew gum in the future. That's amazing.
Important. No, that's important.
But I think my biggest thing that I loved about this episode, and this is something that I love about Star Trek in general, especially about TOS and TNG, is there was a bit of social commentary in this episode, specifically about assisted suicide. That's a hot topic. It's not something that's really talked about much. It's a very hush-hush topic in our society today, especially in the United States. But that... The fact that Saru would ask someone that he cares so much for, he sees as a sister, to help him leave this life. That's a huge request, and it's something really heavy to put on someone else. And the way that they played that scene, I have to hand it to Sonequa Martin-Green. Man, I could totally feel her conflict in that scene, because she's asked to do something that is a final solution for someone else that she really doesn't want to do, but she loves him so much that she's willing to put that aside and actually help him ease his pain and leave this world. And as I watch this episode, watching that scene, I'm trying to think of myself, what would I do in that situation? And I'd like to think that I would do what she did. But I don't know. I don't know what I would do if I was asked that question by someone that I cared about that much. I know I would want to help them, but would I be able to actually help them leave? I don't know. I've never been faced with that decision, and I hope I never am. But kudos to Star Trek Discovery for bringing up something that's so sensitive and so controversial. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not at a state in this country right now where we're making a ruling on whether or not that's legal. And I don't know if we'll ever be in a position where we're going to say, yes, that's legal. But it's something that I know a lot of people want to do because they're in a lot of pain and they're ready to go. But medically, they're not leaving anytime soon. They could live for another year, 6 months, a year and a half, who knows? But they're living with an incredible amount of pain. And, you know, thankfully, as a society and as an animal lover and as a person who's had pets his entire life, one thing that's really painful for me is having to put a pet down. But at the same time, I'm glad and so grateful that I can spare them the pain of having to live with with the medical conditions that they're in. Mm-hmm. We don't have the same standard for humans, but I'm really glad that Star Trek Discovery broached this topic. And for me, that is the essence of what Star Trek has been since day one in the 60s, is bringing up these issues and painting them in a way that you can really soak them in and make up your own mind about them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Jeff, I completely agree. And I'm actually, that's in my notes too, that Discovery handled this issue really, really well. Star Trek brought up assisted suicide once before in TNG. I think the episode is, I actually looked up the ethics, is the episode where Worf gets paralyzed and then asks Riker for Hekbot to essentially kill him because he can no longer live as a warrior. And that episode always made me really angry because Worf is asking his friends for help to do something that is his culture, his way. And they all his friends spend the entire episode lecturing him about how his own culture is wrong. And that episode always really upset me. And I thought that Star Trek could do better because, you know, it's easy to accept other people's cultures when it's something you agree with. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to accept other people's cultures when it's something that you don't agree with. And that gets a lot more complicated, and there's certain things that, you know, what's a red line for you. But I'm really glad that Star Trek came back to that, and I think addressed it in a much better way.
Yeah. Sarah, did you have any thoughts?
I think that it was handled very well. It wasn't in your face. It was just, it blended in well with the episode. And that those were the scenes that to me, that when Sonequa was just about to do what she needed to do and she couldn't, like, that was just so well done. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her acting in this episode was also commendable, extremely commendable. Mm-hmm. I think that this is also one of those parts where some people may watch this episode and not even realize that what was happening and what the discussion could be there, what the statement is. Mm-hmm. I see that a lot in my interactions with Trek fans, you know, where we kind of wonder, like, did you get that message? Because, you know, Star Trek certainly was built on a foundation of making these statements and bringing these things to light that really aren't talked about in other series. Mm. And so I think it was done so well and so subtly that some people may not have even realized what was going on there. And again, I think that fits right into the way that Star Trek tells stories with these messages, a part of it.
I'm glad you said that, Heather, because that's kind of how I felt. I didn't really think too much on it. You know, in Canada, it's not in the news as much. Assisted suicide is actually, you know, as far as I know, it's actually been, it's being practiced, it's been passed. You know, it's just very different here with the way that is in our news. So when I watched the episode, I didn't even think about it. I was just like, what a wonderful thing that she's going to do for this person. Like, why wouldn't you? Like, if somebody needs you in that time, you do it. That's what you do. And so, yeah, mentioning you bring that up, that makes me think on the fact that, I looked at it quite differently and didn't notice it.
Yeah. So the title of the episode, A Novel for Charon, is a reference. So I just pulled this up from Wikipedia. So I'm just going to read what's here instead of sounding like I'm actually knowledgeable about this. But in funerary use, so the deceased were buried with an obel placed in the mouth of the corpse so that once the deceased shade reached Hades, they would be able to pay Charon for passage across the river Styx. Legend had it that those without enough wealth or whose friends refused to follow proper burial rites were forced to wander the banks of the river for 100 years. So I thought that fell in really well with the way that the scene was done. But at the end of the day, it's really about having that family, not so much the wealth, but having the friends and the family behind you. And that's absolutely what came out of this. And I love the fact that, you know, Sonequa said so strongly, you are my family. And then when she was doing it, she said, I love you, Saru. Like, it was just really sweet to see that, because I can't think of a lot of scenes in Star Trek where I hear people say, I love you. And maybe that's just totally escaped my mind or something, but I thought it was very poignant and important to see that, because I don't think that we tell our friends we love them enough.
I agree.
All right. Well, let's go around the table for just one more thing that we pulled out that we learned. Eric, it sounded like you had at least one more you can share.
I guess kind of a fun one. We learned that Kelpians are really jacked when they take their shirts off. I was very impressed because he looks like a beanpole, and then he takes off his uniform top at the end, and Saru's jacked. Like, he's hitting the gym on this.
Body by Starfleet, right?
Yeah.
Jeff, did you have any final points for this part?
Yeah. So something we have not mentioned yet, and I'm surprised that we haven't, was the introduction of the number one character on this episode.
Well, I was saving her for the last part.
Oh, sorry, Heather. Sorry. I thought it was so well done. I am so excited to see more of this character. I loved what they did with her, even though she was very brief. She was only in it for a scene or two, but I thought it was wonderfully played, wonderfully portrayed. You know, as we all know, as being Star Trek fans, you know, Majel Barrett was kind of robbed from being that second in command character in TOS by the network. So I'm really glad to see that character brought back in such a powerful and interesting way.
Sarah, how did you feel about seeing number one?
I was excited because I knew everyone was getting excited online about it. And I will fully confess, I have not seen a lot of the original series, but this show kind of makes me want to watch it and dive into it to get some of the Easter eggs that are going to show up. And so I thought the character was, you know, not really enough screen time. I was hoping for more, but in that little bit of time that she was there, she brought up a lot of questions about this situation with Spock, and there seems to be a lot of suspicion and concern, and I'm excited to see where that goes.
Yeah. Eric, what about you?
Oh, I love number one. So number one has always been one of my favorite Star Trek characters. And yes, Majel Barrett was 100% robbed. I sometimes rewatch The Cage just to get number one. And and yes, she wasn't in there for a long time. I was shocked because I was expecting more of her, kind of like an Amanda character like we had last week. Mm-hmm. But I love how Discovery, like once per episode now, we kind of get a little retcon nod to TOS. Like we haven't forgotten. Like last week we got the D7 and I literally was jumping up and down on my couch with excitement.
I bet you were.
I have a Klingon tattoo for those who don't know, and it's kind of famous now, but I love this week how we got the Chief Loveless, like, oh, no one will ever love the Enterprise as much as Chief Loveless. And then the retcon with the just rip out the entire hologram system. I always hate that thing.
Yep.
And also the fact that number one ordered a cheeseburger and fries. Wow.
And
she's like, I don't care. I'm a first officer on a starship. I get a cheeseburger and fries.
I think women across the universe here all sci-fived number one in that moment because, yeah, I, in fact, I am now craving a cheeseburger and fries. she was. I think a lot of us just really wish that, you know, at the time there was a lot going on in society, in television, and apparently there just wasn't enough room to have two women on the bridge. So I appreciate the fact that there's a point in saying, look at the time it was made. I don't think that necessarily excuses getting rid of her. I think she was too strong of a woman character based on some of the other women that we saw as main characters in TOS. I adore Uhura, but I wouldn't say she was like number one in having the agency and assertiveness and level of intimidation that I think we felt from number one and Captain Pike felt from number one in The Cage. So I was disappointed that we only got this short time with her, but I like that she came out. I would use a little fire emojis since I can't think of good words, but just like, yeah, she's ready to go. She's not going to give up Spock without a fight. I can't wait to see more of her. She lives on in a lot of the books. Ping me on Twitter if you want the titles to those books. We had a discussion about it this week. But she does live on. She makes a great captain. I can't wait to see her in her own series as a captain with her own ship. I think that would be phenomenal. But there is something about her. I just have to see more of her. So that was really super cool and was one of my spin it again points, if not. Well, I think we've covered a lot of my spin it again points.
There's a line in The Cage that I actually think really comes across in that tiny scene we get between Pike and number one. And at the time, it's an incredibly sexist line, but where Pike mutters in The Cage, you know, I'm not used to having a woman on the bridge.
Yeah.
And number one just turns around and glares at him. And he goes, oh, sorry, number one, you don't count. The idea that they're kind of like, they're so close that they're a professional pair now. Mm-hmm. And I thought that really came across in the scene where number one obviously doesn't take any guff from Pike, and Pike just knows it's better to listen to her than disagree with her.
Yeah, I think she, along with just the women in Discovery and the way that women are portrayed, and I've talked about it already in some of the episodes, inspired us to do a women's panel, which will be in March, just talking about the subject. And I have a feeling number one's going to come up in a discussion around her, because I've kind of lost my eloquence tonight, and I apologize for that. But there's just something really special about having such, I dare I use the word intimidating, woman character be on the bridge and then, you know, disappear basically from television and films. I am so grateful that we still got to see Majel play Nurse Chapel and have a part in Star Trek. But bringing this character back is just, it's something really special. And we'll carry on the conversation in that podcast, I guess, because we've got more to talk about here. So let's move it into play a new track, or sorry, let's move it in to spin it again and talk about some other moments, characters, et cetera, that stood out to us the most. Sarah, I'll let you lead with this one.
Sure. I have a few little ones. One thing I thought of as a standout moment was when the translator was broken and everyone's in all their different languages. I just felt so much like when they called on Saru to come and kind of save the day, it felt like such a little nod to Data almost, because Data had so much information and he was always kind of there with the quick answers. And so just, I just kind of felt that little connection there with him having his 94 languages that he speaks, like, just get over here quick. You know everything. Help us. Like, we can't figure out anything. So I thought that was kind of cute. And the other one that I loved was, you brought it up already, it was the gum, having the gum at work. I just always thought that Star Trek was lacking all those little things that people have. Like, I always have a water bottle at my desk. How come no one has a water bottle next to them when they're at their station, or their gum, or their whatever? And so just the fact that she was like, I'm ready with gum, like, that's great. That's just so human. And so something that I always thought, I never noticed that was missing. And there it is. But lastly, real quick, the big one that I that stood out that was just such an important moment was the talk about how when Saru was talking about being at Starbase 7 and applying to be a refugee, I just loved that moment so much. Just the way he simply stated, I was there. I wasn't the only one that was there. There was people far worse situations than I was, and I took the time to talk to all of them and listen. And I just thought that that's such an important thing right now in the real world about paying attention to people who are in these situations and understanding them as they're human just like everybody else, and they all have a voice. So yeah, that was a big one for me.
I think that that empathic soul really comes into play there, and just this message of having empathy for people. I like that he said that, you know, doing that and talking to those other refugees helped a space inside of him grow to feel more and to love more. And I definitely think that the world could benefit from a little bit more love right now, because refugee issues aren't just, they don't just happen in the United States. It's happening across the world. It's a part of our daily conversation right now. And this episode really kind of hit all these traditional Star Trek notes. And that was certainly one of them. Eric, what about you?
Second that one. That was a very powerful moment. And I especially love how Saru followed that on with, I joined Starfleet to help people like that. That had a lot of really deep personal meaning for me. And I'm sure it had a lot of deep personal meaning for a lot of other people. The other moment that really stood out to me was, so I think this might be the canonically the first time we ever use Space Odyssey or Space Odyssey. I did not catch this until the third time I watched the episode, but when Tilly and Stamets are singing back and forth with each other, and Stamets says the line, you know, tell my wife I love her, and Tilly responds, she knows. Like that, like, to me, that was the moment where Stamets and Tilly finally said, you know, we've come really close and we really, really care about each other. And I thought that was a beautiful moment for both of their characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's really another brother-sister relationship. Like, he calls her kiddo, like a big brother would to his little sister. Mm-hmm. And was just so, so super sweet. Sarah, yeah. Did you want to say anything about that?
No, I loved that part. It was the perfect. Fascinated. Yeah, the perfect verses of the song used, you know?
Yeah. Jeff, any thoughts on Tilly and Stamets? Or?
I think for me that thread was the least compelling of this episode. I think it was overshadowed a lot by all of the other things that were going on in this episode. I there were some interesting little bits here that happened, and I guess the most impactful one for me, and buckle up, Disco Trek listeners, because you've heard me go on this tangent so many times before, but I think this episode may have finally revealed the end of the Spore Drive.
Yep.
Obviously, listening to what May had said, Discovery jumping through the mycelial network has caused damage to the ecosystem in the network, and I've theorized a couple of other reasons why the Spore Drive has to go on Disco Trek, but I think this may finally be the thing that, and we see Stamets is ready to shut the whole thing down at this point because it's causing damage that they didn't know they were causing, and obviously that is completely contrary to the mission of Starfleet. And I would imagine once Starfleet Command realizes the damage that the Spore Drive is causing, they would shut it down too. So I think this may finally be the thing that completely shuts down the Spore Drive. And they will never install another ships again, and it will probably be removed at some point from Discovery because you don't want to damage life. You don't want to cause pain. You don't want to cause death. You don't want to cause entropy of another life form or another planet or, of course, the mycelial network. So I thought that was a really cool little tidbit from this episode. And I'm going to throw my chips on this one and say this is probably going to be the thing that causes the Spore Drive to go away. Not the human pilot thing. You know, I've been on that tip before. But I think this may be the thing that finally ends the Spore Drive.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
We will find out. Yeah. We learned in this episode that the mycelial network contains life. And that's where we found out a little bit about what's going on. I still don't know what to make out of creepy May, as I've written down in my notes here, because at this point she's apparently holding Tilly hostage. Tilly's gone to the upside down.
That's what that reminds me of.
Yeah. So I am curious to see what it is about Tilly that this entity or this being is clinging on to do whatever they need to do. There's definitely more going on there. I've seen a lot of discussions surrounding whether this is or isn't the end of the Spore Drive. So I'm definitely curious. We've still got a lot of season to go. So we will see how it plays out. And Jeff, I hope you have a lot of money. We'll see.
Who am I betting against?
I don't know.
I don't think anyone's going to take that bet.
All right. No.
Too much can change. We don't know. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, Mia, creepy May. I'm really curious to see what happens. I think we're all kind of dying to know what's going on with the network and where is Dr. Culber? Like, we're four episodes in. I have only seen him in a message. I need to see him soon.
Use the mycelial network to bring him back before they shut the Spore Drive down.
I don't know. So, you know, we mentioned number one and she was one of my standouts just because I'm super excited. And we've kind of talked about a lot. I mean, like we've all said, Saru's story and Saru and Burnham was really the most powerful part of this episode. And I commend both the Doug Jones and Sonequa Martin-Green on their acting here. And Anthony Rapp and Mary Wiseman. And Tig Notaro, because I thought that the scenes there were really fun. And I thought that what happened, you know, the development between Stamets and Tilly, as we've said, was notable as well. Yeah, I don't have like any really big point to make this episode. I feel like some things with my that resonate with me personally, and that it really has to do with Saru. And I don't want to just keep referencing my own personal life stories and journey on every episode that we do. I thought it was really sweet that Burnham told him, "You found yourself among the stars." That was just a really pretty line. And though I'm definitely not among the stars when I'm podcasting, I have definitely found myself among other Star Trek fans and the discussions that we have. And podcasting itself has really helped me get to use my voice and get to know myself by using my voice. So it's like everything Saru does is just resonates with me so strongly. I'm really curious to see what he does with this new power that he feels, because I absolutely understand what it's like to have that fear removed from your life and feeling your own power and strength. And I think he's got a pretty big question to tackle. I wanted to sum it up. I had reached out online because I did one poll. That poll only got, I don't know, around 150 or so votes in it. So not a big sampling, but it was, you know, which episode has been your favorite of the four? And Owl came out on top. It beat New Eden by, I think, 3% or so. So again, like, we have a lot of people who this is the ultimate Star Trek episode for them, and they love it. And then we have people who struggle with it. And I wanted to end it on a positive note, because one of our friends of the network, Anna, she is Darth Anna 77 on Twitter, said it was the perfect homage to Star Trek. It had elements of science, friendship, family, loyalty, not to mention it was about seeking new life forms, new civilizations to boldly go where no one has gone before. This episode exemplified all of that, which is why it is so loved. And I think that, despite how you look at it and feel about it, I think that this episode is so popular right now because it did hit a lot of those Star Trek notes. Using metaphor to talk about some bigger issues and now I'm just sounding stupid. So I have no eloquence this evening because my brain is dead. I really value that we're able to bring to the table differing opinions on this podcast. And so like, I value the fact that, you know, Jeff struggled with parts of this. And I think it's important to bring a voice to those things. And I mean, I struggled with parts of the episode too. And at the end of the day, like, who says it? John Champion, I think, like, some Star Trek, you know, one person's favorite Star Trek is someone else's least favorite Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that rings true across the board. And I think everyone's reaction to an episode is perfectly valid, whether they like it or not. And I enjoy bringing that to our podcast and having those discussions online. It's important, and it's nice to hear varying perspectives because we all don't see things the same way. But I'm eager to see what happens next week. I hear that you need to put on your seatbelt for that one as well. So we've had ping pong. We've gone to Wimbledon. I don't know what's next.
Daytona 500.
Yeah, something. We're in for a ride, and it looks like, hopefully we save Tilly, because I don't know what's going on there. But I am excited to see what happens next week. So if people would like to carry on the conversation, let's tell them where to find us on social medias. Eric, where might we find you?
I am a member of the unofficial group, of course. You can also find me on USS Pershing Officers Club on Facebook. I am an admin there, as well as www.usspershing.com.
Excellent. And Sarah, where might we find you?
I too am in the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas group on Facebook, as well as the group that's all about the crafts and the craft swap.
Yeah,
I'm a big crafter and big into the Star Trek crafting. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram, so probably able to find me through Facebook on those.
All right, Jeff, where can we find you?
You can find me sitting by my desk scratching my head because I somehow forgot to mention the thing that I struggle with most with this episode. But I'm so sorry, guys. I don't want to derail our exits. But real quick. And I want to make this lead to a big discussion. But I think something that has been really plaguing my brain about this episode was the part of the episode where the universal shipwide translator malfunctioned. Now, in my mind, the universal translator, if you were looking at someone who was speaking a foreign language, you'd see their lips moving in the foreign language, but you'd hear English. But no, that's not what happened in this episode. They're all actually speaking foreign languages. Wait a minute. That's not how it's supposed to work. But anyway, I digress.
Bothered me too, Jeff.
Thank you, Eric. I'm not alone in this. But okay, you can find me on Twitter at Warp Factor Jeff. I'm also part of the unofficial Star Trek Las Vegas convention group, and of course, the Tricorder Transmissions website. Heather, on to you.
On to me. I don't know. I thought that scene was really cool and fun and neat, and not something that I don't know. I've seen a lot of things do. Anyway, you can find me in that same unofficial STLV group. We are 170 days out from that convention, so we'll see you soon. Book all your stuff. I've got a plane ticket and that's it, but I'm going to get the rest of it eventually, and I can't wait to see you all there. No, I'll get a ticket. It's just, you know, one day we won't have money. I look forward to that day. In the meantime, outside of that, you can find me on Twitter. I am at LLAPASPER. The show is at Disco_Trek. Be sure to follow us and engage with us there. And then we are at Tricorder Show for the network. Please consider supporting us at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. We promise we are serious this time. The tiers are coming. The perks are coming. They're going to be really awesome. And they are community focused because we love you and we appreciate all of you. Whether it's $1 or $20, it's really irrelevant. We just absolutely adore you, but we understand if you're giving us $20, okay, we'll give you a little bit extra. But still, we love all of you. So in the meantime, oh shoot, I don't have a fun phrase to end the show today. Anybody have one for this week? We do, because we were doing, I do this every episode, we were doing Long Live the Empire last season.
Live, love, and prosper?
Bring on Mata Judge.
Okay, what does that one mean?
Remain Klingon.
Oh gosh. Oh goodness. We'll find you all among the stars.
There we go.
Yeah. Perfect. That one works. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.